Welcome back to Consider This with me, Melissa Idris and Sharad Kutin. We're chatting tonight to Dr. Kosri King, one of the founders of the advocacy group Malaysian Health Coalition. Let's talk about the Benteng cluster, because this was within the Lahad Datu District Police Station and the Tawa Prison. And I'm wondering, because we also saw that cluster in Bukit Jalil, the Bukit Jalil Detention Centre, are these clusters a sign that there has been failure on the part of institutions to really practice the SOPs that have been put in place?
In short, Melissa, perhaps the answer is yes, but it requires us to dissect and unpack this a little bit. So we'll begin with some brief statistics. Prisons, we have about 70,000 prisoners in Malaysia within Malaysian prisons, and Malaysian prisons are 130% over capacity. So we're budgeted for about 50, 55,000 people, and we've got 70,000 people inside Malaysian prisons. So even before the pandemic began, we already have a problem of overcrowding within prisons, which then the virus clearly, in overcrowded situations, finds it very easy to spread. So the problem started even before the pandemic. And when you then consider of the 70,000 or so prisoners that we have in the Malaysian system, approximately 50 to 70% of them are there for minor drug offences. Mm. Now, perhaps we shouldn't look at what the definition of what minor is, and I don't want to get into that conversation, but there's always been a debate here about whether or not we should securitize the drug problem or medicalize the drug problem. What I mean to say is, when you have a drug offender, is it a crime or is it a medical condition that requires help? For example, psychiatric assistance or methadone replacement, putting them or giving them access into the healthcare system.
Yep.
And many people have actually talked about giving the prisoners of minor drug offenses more access to the healthcare system and take them out of the prison so that we can decongest the prisons.
Right. And I think this was a conversation that was sparked by the Pakatan Harapan government and the Minister of Health at that time. But, you know, speaking, coming back to the present, I mean, what we have seen over the last 6 months is some countries have, in fact, released prison populations. So this is not extraordinary, at least when you look at the global picture. Is that something we could do now and that would actually be beneficial in the long run? We talk about the numbers of, a minor offense, offenders. Could that be a solution if, in fact, this is going to be, we're looking at more clusters happening in our prisons?
Absolutely. And I'm supportive of this, Sharad, for public health reasons, because it reduces overcrowding. I'm supportive of this because of ethical and religious reasons, because we're treating them as human beings and giving them dignity. I'm supportive of this from a criminal justice system as well, because the punishments need to be proportional to the crime. And I'm using air quotes for the word crime, because possession of even 1 or 2 grams of a particular drug gives you a very high punishment very, very quickly. So I'm supportive of this for very many reasons. But it's also very pragmatic. And some of the countries offer the top of my head that have released prisoners during the pandemic itself have been France, Italy, certain states in the United States, Ireland, Chile, as well as Iran, Afghanistan and Somalia as well. So it's a host of countries that have actually released prisoners. Obviously, we need to build a system to release these prisoners. Minor offences, for example, however you define minor, people who are older, for example, and therefore at higher risk, or people who are nearing the ends of their sentences, and maybe these are three categories that you can quickly, appropriately release them to decongest the prisons.
Suking, do you know if this is a conversation that we are having here in Malaysia among policymakers? Is this a conversation that's already begun?
To the best of my knowledge, no, this is not a conversation that's already begun. I think civil society has talked about this for very many years, I would say. So the lawyers, the legal fraternity, the human rights fraternity have talked about this for quite a large period. And I think there should be an unlikely coalition between, shall we say, the human rights practitioners and the legal practitioners, criminologists, criminal justice and so on, together with the healthcare professionals.
Right.
Because that unlikely coalition is very important for very many reasons.
Okay, speaking, you began by saying our public health response is responsive and it's evidence-based, right? So when you look at this international situation and best practices, as it were, why isn't that being followed through? Why isn't this government looking at best practices around pragmatic solutions to very real problems and acting on them?
Well, that's a great question. A couple of structural reasons. I think the government new, and therefore you're finding your footing with the bureaucracy and the civil service and getting the machinery of government. Because when you get into government, you decide to pull a few levers of government, you realize nothing actually works. So I think we have to give them the benefit of some doubt. However, a lot of it is political will, as in if we don't have the political will, then we're not going to pull those levers hard enough. Imagine if the government actually wanted to do something, we'll be able to have very many conversations. And I'm glad that at some point we will talk about the issues that we're not talking about. And this is one of those issues that we're not talking about. What to do with custodial health. Because it's not just prisons, it's also detention centres. And what do we do about undocumented migrants and so on? So I arrive at these two very structural challenges. And maybe political will is a problem.
Well, you raised a good point, and we have about a minute left. And I do want to ask you that, what are those conversations that we have not embarked on that we really need to start today?
Well, a short laundry list would look like the following. The first one would be undocumented migrants and how can we improve the health of their health while balancing national security and economy needs as well. We're talking 2 to 4 million people. Even with the best of resources, you can't just deport 2 to 4 million people overnight. So that's one thing we're not talking about. The second thing that we're not talking about would be what to do with the regional travel bubble and to restart intra-ASEAN trade and intra-ASEAN tourism, trade, economic development, and familial ties. The third and final thing, and I think this is a pretty good list already, the third and final thing is how does Malaysia get in front of the line for the vaccine? And what do we do about, for example, the COVAX facility for which 172 countries have already signed up, but not Malaysia, also not China and not the United States, but those are separate conversations. How does Malaysia position ourselves that we're early enough in the queue to get the vaccine if and when it comes?
That's
these are three
great
examples.
Great laundry list. Yeah. And
very quickly, could you tell us what that COVAX list, I mean, exactly what that is for our audience?
Sure. COVAX, or the COVAX facility, is one of three pillars of ACT. ACT is Access to COVID Tools, launched by the World Health Organization in April this year. It's designed to give the world three tools. The first tool is a vaccine. The second tool is the medicine or the treatment for COVID. The third tool is the test kits or the testing facilities for COVID. And the vaccine, the treatment, and the test kits for COVID are the three pillars, are designed to, well, resolve problems of patents and intellectual property and access for 7.8 billion human beings. Because if you have a pandemic somewhere, the world is not safe. A pandemic somewhere is a pandemic everywhere. We have to get the vaccines, the treatments, and the test kits to 7.8 billion people.
Okay, and you're saying Malaysia's not signed up?
No.
All right, well, that is a conversation that we need to have, another conversation on Consider This. Thank you for giving us more topics for the show, and thank you for being on the show tonight. We really appreciate your time. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Lisa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.